this robot, he's got to be removed.
He's just a kid.
Your little robot's a big problem for me.
Hello and welcome to episode 56 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I'm Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Hahn.
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
All right, so this week our hot topic is the brand new Avengers trailer. Then we're going to do our big review, which is Chappie, and then we're going to wrap up with a little Chappie-themed game. So first off, Avengers. Angie, you've got that one.
All right, so this week Marvel released the latest trailer for Avengers Age of Ultron. I hope it's the last major trailer they're releasing because it comes out in 2 months and I feel like I've seen everything that I want to see from it so far. But the biggest reveal in it was our first look at Vision, who is a new character played by Paul Bettany, who, if you've been paying attention, has actually been a part of the Marvel Universe since the very beginning because he is the voice of Jarvis. Tony Stark's like AI that like British guy that talks to him when he's in the Iron Man uniform, which is not a coincidence. So in the comics, Vision is created by Ultron, but in the movie we can assume that there's some kind of connection there, but we don't know exactly what it is. We don't get a good look at him, but I think because people have been like waiting to see what he looks like, it was kind of a thrill.
Well, Marvel's definitely been playing that up. They hide him everywhere, like in all the posters and even the toys. Like, people are freaking out over toys just because that's the only place we've been able to see him.
Yeah, and elsewhere, you know, it's the same. It's some of the same stuff that we've seen in the others, where the Avengers are kind of hanging out but kind of having trouble. And I have to say, I have a lot emotionally invested in these characters, and it just makes me so sad when they fight. Like, the whole existence of the Hulkbuster costume, or the Hulkbuster Iron Man suit, makes me so sad.
I love that Angie gets so upset. Like, and I know that's our job. We get upset about fictional characters, but, like, before the podcast, Angie was like, you literally look like you were on the verge of tears. You're like, guys, I really don't like watching the Avengers fight each other. And I was like, oh, it's going to be a rough month.
It's going to be a rough phase three because one of the next major events to come up is Civil War, where that is literally all just about them fighting each other. So
it is kind of nice to actually feel like they could lose, though. I think these trailers do a really good job of pitting them against a villain and just like a situation that maybe they've created them within themselves that actually feels like, yeah. I mean, I don't know how it's going to end. Maybe they'll all live happily ever after, but the trailers really make me feel like it's a viable threat. Whereas it's not just like this one villain that pops up out of nowhere and Captain America has to bring him down. Like, this feels like something that can completely rattle their organization for forever.
So it feels like a really organic story to go to in that after what Tony Stark's been through, I believe that he would make this construct that becomes Ultron that he means as a means of completely protecting the world. But, you know, there's a lot of movies lately I've been watching about guys who have such an ambition. And I say guys because they're movies about guys, sorry. And that they get a tunnel vision and don't think about the possible ramifications. And, like, AI is definitely one of those things that we're getting closer and closer to. And it kind of freaks us out. And, you know, we've had movies like that forever. Terminator's about AI. The Matrix is about AI. And, like, what if we did create this thing that we can't control? And I like the setup of that. And then I like that on top of this interesting premise, they gave us all these little character moments in the trailer that just had me being like, ooh, like, I'll admit, I was like, ooh, Thor shirtless again. Thank you, Marvel. And also, there's like a little teeny moment where it looks like Black Widow and Hulk are going to kiss. And I did not know that was something I wanted. But apparently I do.
Yeah, some Collider readers were freaking out in the comments section that was going to happen. I kind of like that idea because I didn't know that was coming either. And that feels like a fresh, like, it could add a nice fresh layer to the characters that especially Hulk needs a little bit.
Yeah, they've always been really good at character moments. And the other thing is that I'm hopeful, well, you guys were talking about like the threat that's in Avengers Age of Ultron, and I'm hopeful that it's going to fix Marvel's villain problem a little bit, because they have a really bad track record with villains that you just don't care about and that don't feel like a threat. And honestly, like, I don't expect like 80% of the Avengers to die in this movie because they've got like a whole fucking franchise to run. But it feels like a threat because it feels like it's really, really personal. Like, the threat is something that came from within themselves because Tony Stark created Ultron, and it's creating all these divides between the characters. So basically, as sad as I am to see my beloved Avengers fight each other and at each other's throats, as much as that breaks my heart, I think it's actually good for the franchise.
Someone has to die, though, right? Is that the general consensus?
I think this might be one of those movies where a character they introduce dies, because in Civil War, like, I actually read the Civil War comics because my husband got them all, and, like, that's when shit hit the fan. I don't remember the specifics because it's been a few years since I read them, but I was reading them and just being like, holy shit. And I have a friend who's super into comics who has like a lot of theories about how Marvel may and may not stick to what the comics did, which I feel like we're going to, I actually told him we may have him on when we review Avengers 2, because I feel like he'll be a really good source. His name's Andrew Sanford, and he has a podcast called Half White Side of a Black Man. If you guys are at all curious, you should totally check it out.
All right.
Yeah, let's see what about it for the Avengers.
Anything anyone wants to add before we move on?
I can't believe it's been 3 years since the last Avengers. That's it. Yeah. That's all I want to say now.
Yeah.
All right, so on to our big review of the week, Chappie. Now, here is the official IMDb synopsis of Chappie. In the near future, crime is patrolled by an oppressive mechanized, Jesus Christ. All right, I officially don't like the synopsis. Mechanized police force. When one police droid, Chappie, is stolen and given new programming, he becomes the first robot with the ability to think and feel for himself. Clearly, I should have read that before. All right, so I love Chappie, but if you've been watching our show, you probably know that I always have a soft spot for, like, cute animated pet-like creatures who are just, like, really sweet and lovable. And sure enough, he really struck a chord with me. And I already see Christy, at least, making a face. But Chappie is not for everyone. This is a very extreme movie in a lot of respects. And I'll definitely admit that it has certain flaws, which I'm sure we're going to get into. But I think that this is Neil Blomkamp at least taking a step back towards District 9 and away from Elysium and delivering a movie that has heart. And it meant a lot to me what this character goes through, and I just thoroughly enjoyed it from start to finish.
I actually think I like this a little bit more than Christy did. So I guess we're just going to go in descending order.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah, so I feel like I feel like Neil Blomkamp is so good with, like, he loves, like, you know, dreaming up these worlds and, like, having big ideas and, like, trying to say big, meaningful things. The problem is, he is a terrible screenwriter. He co-wrote this one with Terry Tatchell, who also wrote co-wrote District 9 with him. And that screenplay was okay, but he did, I think, did he do Elysium by himself or whatever?
I think Elysium was solo.
Yeah, and it's becoming apparent that he is a terrible screenwriter. Just the story in this is a mess. Like, the synopsis you read, it's fine, but there's, like, 8 more elements in it that they don't even go into. The dialogue is just god-awful. People are always saying the most, like, on-the-nose, like, clunky, obvious things all the time. Like, there's so many just, like, tiny little plot holes that just, it just, that makes the whole movie feel just structurally unsound. I don't know. Also, for the record, Chappie, not so much a pet as a small child, and I like pets better, so.
That's actually why I was making a face, because, like, I know Perry that it's, like, if you've got a cute thing in your movie, she is, like, halfway to liking it already. It's, like, a very good way to get you on their side. But, like, Chappie is definitely much more a child. They keep talking, like, they actually compare him repeatedly to a baby, and then to mankind as a whole, because he says to his maker, to Angie's point about dialogue, he's like, why would you create me if I just have to die? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I wanted to like this movie. I'm a big fan of District 9. I didn't hate Elysium like a lot of people we know did. And I was looking forward to this. I was kind of, even when the bad reviews started hitting before I saw it, I was kind of optimistic, where I was like, no, I think this could be interesting. I really love Short Circuit in the 80s, and this is essentially Short Circuit, so that should be fine. But, like, I loathed this movie. I just couldn't get into it because I felt that, one, he gives us no reason to actually like the characters before he throws us into this whole, like, rollicking world of AI and blah, blah, blah. And, like, he sets up this world of AI that doesn't matter, really. Like, there's this whole thing about this police force that's made up of robots, but it doesn't matter. Like, that doesn't affect the story very much at all. And then it goes into this whole thing with Chappie and these horrible garbage people that are played by Di Antwoord. And I hated Ninja so much. Like, I'm aware that Di Antwoord was a thing before I saw this movie, but, like, I don't really like their music. So I've never decided to have an opinion on them because I didn't need to. It was just like, oh, that's not for me. Over there. But, like, in this movie, Ninja is such a douchebag piece of garbage man that, like, I wanted him to just explode. I wanted Chappie to just murder him in the face. And it just drove me crazy. Like, less so Vizar, who they call by, I guess, her real name, Yolandi, in the movie. And the other thing that confused me so much. Okay, so if you don't know who Die Antwoord is, they are a hip-hop band from South Africa. In the movie, they play themselves, but the movie never mentions that they're musicians, but they have all these t-shirts and swag with their faces on it, and, like, no one ever talks about it, and I was just so confused.
This probably doesn't matter because it's not mentioned in the movie, but during the junket, Neil Blomkamp explained that it's supposed to be a couple years into the future where their music career has died off. So they're stuck, like, trying to, you know, make money by pulling off crimes, and they wear their own swag because it's stuff that they haven't sold yet.
Yeah, I got
this book.
That's
actually really interesting, and it would have been... the movie had too much stuff going on as it is, but it would have gone a long way toward me being like, oh.
I would have liked a little more about that, but, like, unlike you, Christy, I had no clue who they were before this, and when they popped up in the trailer, I was really disappointed, because in the very beginning with the teasers, it was much more so about Chappie and, like, oh, cute robot, I love this, and then all of a sudden they were there, and, like, in the trailers at least, I found them really annoying and off-putting. And at the beginning of the movie, maybe a little bit. I mean, they're definitely not put out there as the most likable characters ever. But they totally grew on me. And I really appreciated the way that their dialogue and their music was interwoven together. It's like Yolandi's voice is so distinct. And she'd be saying a line of dialogue. And then all of a sudden, you'd hear her voice come in and, like, just, like, this really, like, upbeat, powerful music. And it would just transition so well. And it would kind of, like, push you into the next scene with, like, an extra jolt of energy. And that I really appreciated.
I think it was a neat idea. But I kept being like, wait, so are they them? And like I said, I only knew that they were a band. I didn't know enough about them. I found it really distracting. And then, like, on top of that, though, I just felt like I didn't know them as characters. He's a dickwad, that I get. And, like, as soon as Chappie is at all, like, a child or a puppy or whatever, she's all like, oh, little Chappie, and she's super into it. But, like, aside from being sort of protective of him, because she tries to be protective of him, but then anytime Ninja wants to do something horrible to Chappie, she's just like... Like, I just didn't understand. Like, every character is like that, where they have, like, one word you can apply to them to sum them up. And I didn't care about these people. It was actually, like, it reminded me of when we reviewed Godzilla, and Angie said the Godzilla movie made her think humanity had a good run, we're done. And, like, this made me feel that way, because I felt like there was so little humanity in this movie that I was like, if AI is going to come and wipe us out, I feel like I'm good with it. Because
well,
this movie
gave me
nothing.
Well, I think that's one of the things that the movie is trying to suggest. It's like, most movies that we see with robots, it's like the robots versus the humans. But here you can't even judge the robots, because most of the bad acts in the movie are being carried out by humans.
Yeah,
not
the
robots.
Humans are garbage people.
Well, the humans are garbage people. No, I'll admit, most of them are garbage people. I like that term. I'm going to use that again. I'll quote you on it, though.
All right.
The people are bad in the movie, but I feel like, at least in terms of, like, Dion, Ninja, Yolandi, and America, I grew to like them through Chappie. Like, I cared enough about Chappie that I wanted him to have this idealistic version of, like, mommy and daddy and maker that he really wanted.
I just feel like all the characters, as she said, were really one-dimensional. But the thing is, I couldn't figure out what this movie was trying to tell me. Like, I honestly could not figure it out. I mean, is it trying to talk about, like, militarized police forces? Or is it trying to talk about, I don't know, like, is AI good? I don't know.
I took it as militarized police forces were the norm, and it was more so trying to explore the use of AI and whether it's right
there?
Or not.
Like, what
but
is
like,
this
what
saying
about
artificial intelligence?
See, that's what's hard to say, because the villains in this, like, I feel like that argument is mostly driven by them, and they are so one-dimensional. It's like what I said, I forgot who I said it to, but, like, with my interview with Hugh Jackman, and I felt like a total asshole, because my first question was like, so, your character's bad from start to finish, and he's like, no. But then I've seen the movie twice now, and I was thinking about it, that question, as I was reassessing, and he is.
There's a part in this movie, which is not a spoiler because it really has nothing to do with the plot, where Hugh Jackman's character, who is an office mate and, like, rival engineer of Dion, played by Dev Patel, goes up to him, slams his face into his desk, and puts a gun to his head, and everyone in the office sees it, and he's like, it was just a prank! It wasn't loaded, it was just a prank! And I'm like, wait a minute, like, world is that something you can get away with? It makes no sense. It happens in the middle of the movie and has zero repercussions.
Yeah, they have a boss played by Sigourney Weaver, and she, as far as we can tell, doesn't even know this happened, which is insane. But it's stuff like that that I meant when I was talking about how there's just like a thousand tiny little things that don't make sense, and any one of them by themselves wouldn't have been a deal breaker, but there's just so many of them that it becomes apparent that Neil Blomkamp loves certain things about this. Like, he loves like having a big idea, he loves like creating a world, he loves filling it with like little visual details, but stuff like, you know, like character motivations or like building a cohesive world with cohesive rules, like stuff like that, it seems like he can't be bothered. And if he ever makes another movie, well, I guess he's definitely making other movies, I just fucking hope to God that they don't let him touch the screenplay, because he's a terrible screenwriter.
The only semi-deal breaker I had was the villains. Like, the good guys totally grew on me. The villains, I think, in this movie are probably some of the most uninteresting one-dimensional villains I've seen in a really long time.
And also, you don't need them both.
Well, Sigourney Weaver is completely unnecessary, because just having her there raises the question of, like, what's more important for Tetraball, making money or delivering products that can save lives? That is never explored. And then you also have to ask, why is she so dedicated to Hugh Jackman's character? He's a total asshole. They don't seem to have any previous relationship or, like, anything where she owes him anything. Yet she's still giving him money to fund the moose, which
there's
is a
no
total
apparent
disaster.
Reason for her as a star to be in this movie. She gets, like, three scenes and has nothing to do in them.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe there was like some deleted scenes with her in it. So I asked Neil Blomkamp about deleted scenes. He does not like deleted scenes.
I'm not surprised, because there are parts of this movie that just do nothing. I was so frustrated. Like, I actually got mad, because I was like, this is a 2-hour long movie. And I was literally in my head just being like, there are other things I could be doing right now. I could be taking a walk through 20 degree weather. I could be eating cookies. I just got so frustrated, because I was like, this movie is so all over the place. And it's like presented like a fairy tale, kind of like Short Circuit was in the 80s, where it's just like, what if? And there's a sense of whimsy to it. But like, also this really just disgusting sensibility that I actually thought this movie was ugly. And I know it's a lot of like Die Antwoord's thing, where they're like, look, we drew funny stick people on the walls and they all have penises. And like, I just don't understand.
I loved that. I loved the random colors that would just pop everywhere. And I think that no matter what we say about Neil Blomkamp's writing abilities, I think he's got his visuals down. And especially when it comes to the VFX and Chappie, too. It all looks stunning.
Well, this also that this movie feels like it's rated R solely because of the use of the word motherfucker. Like, it's said all the time.
I can think of something else, but maybe we should transition into spoilers before we touch on that. All right, you want to talk about spoilers?
Yeah, let's do it.
Just to touch on something you said before about thinking that you could do anything else but watch this movie. When this movie wrapped up, this is a big spoiler. So when this movie wrapped up, I wanted to keep being in this world, but I totally wanted like Chappie and Dion to be living next to the prawns from District 9. Did anyone else think that they could have been right next door? Because that's all I thought of when I walked out.
But that's a cute idea. I guess, So at the end of the movie, I guess what happens is that everyone kind of, well, people start transcending, right?
It's basically transcendence.
Dion becomes a robot also. Chappie becomes a different robot. Dion becomes a robot also. And
it's
Yolandi
all it's because Hugh Jackman's character fucking just loses it and decides to destroy everybody so he could just
Which
have
makes
the
no
moose
sense.
Go play
like,
for
the only
a while.
Way that his motivation makes sense is if he's a psycho, and how boring is it to just be like, well, that character's psychotic.
Well, that's why I asked that question at the beginning. Was there ever a point where Vincent was creating the moose for good?
I mean, I wonder if it's one of those things where Hugh Jackman in his head had, like, a backstory and, like, a motivation that made sense, but it just didn't really translate or, like, kind of come across that way in the movie. Like, maybe that's why he seemed so surprised that people thought his character was evil when he has zero redeeming qualities.
He's a jock bully gone mental. It's disgusting. And he's always throwing around a football for, like, no apparent reason.
Yeah, it's actually kind of insulting to people who are, like, military people, if anything. The other thing with the one-dimensional characters, Chappie, the main character, also very one-dimensional. Like, the movie keeps being like, oh, he's childlike, and I'm like, okay, I see that. What is he beyond that? Like, the children that I've met in my life still have personalities. They're, like, curious, or they're, like, you know, kind of sad, or, like, they're, like, really energetic, or they're, like, funny, or, like, you know, they have things that they like. They have personalities. Chappie is just a sponge. Like,
oh, I totally thought that though. Like, he has things he likes, and I think that you see that as the movie progresses. Him like learning what right and wrong is, and like what makes him feel bad and what makes him feel good, and that's why it's so satisfying at the end when he gets to live happily ever after with Dion, mommy, and daddy.
It kind of just feels like Chappie, because he's so easily convinced of stuff. I don't feel good about his survival. I feel creeped out because how it was so easy for Ninja to be like, yeah, you can totally murder people.
He believes every single thing he's told. He believes everything he's told. He just repeats everything that anyone says. He like mimics everything he sees. And I mean, I get that kids do that to some extent, but it kind of felt like, what is Chappie even beyond the stuff that he's picked up from everyone else? It doesn't feel like there's a fundamental core to him. So even though the movie kept being like, oh, he's like the first robot who can like think and feel for himself, I'm like, give me one example in this movie where he's thinking and feeling for himself. Mostly he just does whatever he's told. And then there's also like, so there's all this stuff about like, you know, the gangsters are trying to push Chappie toward being a gangster like them. Dion wants Chappie to be, like, a good person. And so there's, like, some, like, conflict between, like, oh, okay, is Chappie going to, like, hurt people? Like, is he going to be violent? Like, is he going to be a criminal, et cetera, et cetera? And at the end, there's one thing where at some point he figures out that Hugh Jackman was, like, behind all this nonsense that happened. So then he, like, beats the shit out of Hugh Jackman. And it's supposed to be a triumphant moment, but I couldn't figure out, like, okay, so what are you trying to say? Like, you want Chappie to be a good person, but you also want me to be satisfied watching him beat the shit out of someone. It reminded me of that scene in Big Hero 6 where, like, Baymax kind of is programmed to, like, go after the villain. And is portrayed in that movie as, like, a really heartbreaking moment where you're just like, oh, it's just, like, you know, his ideals have, like, gone wrong. But in this movie, it goes in that same direction, but it's just like, meh. I mean, wasn't it fun to watch Hugh Jackman get beat up?
I keep going back to Short Circuit. Short Circuit had the same thing where there's a scene where he is horribly abused, poor Johnny Five, and he becomes, like, tough. And then he gets – it's upsetting. It's sad. I don't know. I thought I'd be able to engage with this, frankly, specifically because I was obsessed with Short Circuit as a kid, and I just didn't get into this movie at all.
Complete opposite. I totally fell for Chappie, and I loved his journey and seeing how he reacted to everything, and I guess, like, I will have to admit, it is a little heightened the way he just absorbs information and follows that exact thing, but I also think that really serves the comedy of the movie, and it led to some of the most entertaining and some of the most fun scenes of the entire thing, but all right, the villains suck. Everything else I absolutely loved. I could have spent another hour hanging out with Diane Ward, Dev Patel, and Charlotte Copley as Chappie. This thing had so much more heart than Elysium, and I loved it, but I'll also admit this is not a movie for everybody. I definitely think it's going to go one way or the other, and there's very little middle ground here.
I only want to see another movie by Neil Blomkamp if he promises that he hasn't touched the fucking screenplay.
Yeah, this one really actually had me being like, how did District 9 even happen? Like, I don't get it. I feel like maybe he should just go and paint cool sci-fi posters. I don't know what the deal is.
Way harsh. All right, with that, we're going to move on to the last section of this week's show. Our game, which is a Chappie game, and Christy is going to introduce that.
Yeah, we're going to begin actually with last week's game to announce our winner. So last week, we asked you to name the llama drama movie that Hollywood should inevitably make of the llama chase. And our winner is West Anthony, at Dr. West Anthony, who said, E tu llama tambien.
I like that. That made me laugh when I saw it.
I would watch E tu llama tambien. So our new game for this week, ironically, is if there were a Chappie 2, what would its title be? So, you know how they used to, this is less the thing now, but like, you know, Chappie 2, Bot in the City or whatever.
I watched that movie.
Perry would. I would run screaming. But I did some fun photoshops for IFC. We're going to put it right here. Combining some artwork from Short Circuit 2 with Chappie. And we want you to look at this and tell us, what would your Chappie sequel be called? So tweet at us at Popcorn Prosecco, and we'll announce the winner next week.
Alrighty. So that is a wrap on episode 56 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You can find us all over the place. We are on YouTube. You can also watch us on iTunes. And please like, rate, and comment over there, because that's always a huge help. We have our own website, popcornandprosecco.com. We are on Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco. We are on Facebook. You can like us there. And all three of us are all over the web as well. Christy, you want to go first?
I'm at Christy Puchko on Twitter. That's at KRISTYPUCHKO. And I write all over the web, so you can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
Angie?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com. And Perry, I see your face being like, is she going to fuck it up this time?
I was wondering if that was registering.
Yeah, it was registering, you asshole.
I'll never forget. All right, you can find me on collider.com, and my Twitter handle is at PNemiroff. So that's it for this week. Thank you guys for watching, and we'll see you next time.
I'm alive. I am Jeppy.